ports here, he was arrested at the same time, and he later was convicted also over in the Madison court for armed robbery. But it's kind of confusing. But you say they got Cameron out and actually stretched him
up? Yeah, he was up, and he kept hanging out of the road. We had a bunch
of
men.
Now, this was on the courthouse lawn?
Yeah, in the same tree. See, they hang the two boys were on that big limb. Smith there and Cameron and Ship. And, of course, the rope that had pulled Cameron boy up. But he kept hanging on to that because we had a bunch of guys in jail for stealing chickens. Mm-hmm. Those things I remember very well.
Did you ever talk to the sheriff during this time at all? Were gone.
No.
Did you talk to him that morning at any time?
No.
Anyway?
The reason I didn't talk to him because they were not prisoners of the city.
I understand.
And of course, at that time wouldn't have felt that it was important, but later on it was important. Because I got blamed for being the mayor of Marion, not defending them, when they were really prisoners of the county, because it happened outside the city. They were arrested by the sheriff and his deputies.
This road was outside the city?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was probably 3 miles.
And what about this guy called Beshear?
Jake Kemmel.
No, Beshear, a restaurant owner. He was tried, too. He was tried first for part in the lynching.
Well,
he was a restaurant owner, Assyrian or a Turk.
I never knew him. But Charlie Lennon was tried. They couldn't identify. I thought there must have been 3. I think there was indicted for.
No, there were 7 indicted.
Well, but nobody could identify any of them outside. It was a known fact that Charlie Lennon was one of them, but they would not identify him to convict him.
Now, what was the reason for that?
Well, of course, the mob that killed those boys were probably the type of people that were friends of Charlie Lennon's and those that the other fellows that were brought in and indicted.
Did you ever hear anybody, the conversations of the people that were involved in it? I mean, anybody that you knew or name that you recognized that were in the jail or participated in it? Did you
no,
ever hear anybody?
No, there's a man living today that was in there. But I wouldn't tell you his name and I know him. One of the men who was involved with Charlie, but I'll never tell you his name, but he's still living in Marion today.
He's still living in Marion,
yeah.
Indiana? Well, would you do something for me?
I'll introduce you to him sometime.
Well, I'd like for you to do that. I would like to get the thought. I may, you know, I don't know where I'm going to write a book about this or what, but I don't want anyone to have hard feelings after all this time. I would, might even just delay it until everyone has passed from the scene altogether. Mm-hmm. But you see, we're about to get a disruption in history here because nothing's ever been written about this definitively. Mm-hmm. It's one of those just gaps. It may not be important, but whoever this fellow is you're talking about, you see, could give me more information than probably anybody around that scene at the time. And I need to talk to some people like that, and I know that's going to be a very difficult thing.
I would have to, in a roundabout way, in a conversation. I see him every week, you know.
Well, if you would just maybe broach the subject sometime and tell him that I'm researching this and background and see whether or not he might
be
willing.
And he's a good friend of yours, too.
See if he might not be willing to let me talk to him about it. Would you do that, at least?
Getting back to that, Charlie Lennon was in 1940 was convicted on a manslaughter charge and sent to Michigan City for 1 to 10.
Now, who's that?
Charlie Lennon. He was one of the fellows that
he was what?
He killed Hobe Whitten, who was my chief of police, brother Red Whitten, in 1940 in front of the Indiana Cafe on 4th and Branson in a street fight, knocked him down, fractured his skull, and Red Whitten died. And Charlie Lennon in 1940 was convicted for manslaughter and served 1 to 10 for killing Red Whitten.
Is that right?
He's dead. He died in the last 2 years, Charlie.
Well, there was a fellow in there by the name of Asa Davis.
Asa Davis.
He was indicted.
He was a music teacher and played bass horn.
A music teacher?
Yeah.
You mean he taught in his home? He didn't teach at the school?
No. But he was a great big heavyset fellow. Kind of a radical, but one of those bruisers.
Was he capable?
Very dignified, though, but he was the bruiser type.
Is he a type of guy that would be involved in
this, you would think? He's dead, too.
There's a guy who they never found. They never, some newspaper reports put his first name as A.M. It's like Prime, P-R-A-I-M, or I-A-M. You ever hear of him?
No.
Pram? There's a guy by the name of Walter or Waller.
Walter.
Walter.
No, wait. The name, see, you're refreshing my memory on Walter. I know him well.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me see. Okay, go ahead.
Walter, I'm going back several years there. But he had a brother who married Lucille Scott. Lucille Scott's uncle, Jake, was my assistant fire chief. But that's why I knew the Walter family there.
Those are on tapes, and I haven't had time to take it off yet. Let's see, Camel was one of them, the sheriff, Bashir, Lennon,
that was
Davis,
Bashir, A.C. Davis,
Walter, Pram, and there's somebody else in there. See, they only tried those two and dismissed everything else.
Did they say they tried Lennon and Bashir?
Mm-hmm. Bashir first. Mm-hmm. They had a very weak case against him, apparently. But then Lennon was free for a long time. They only apprehended him just before the Bashir case went to trial. And then they put him on trial next, and that seemed to be their strongest case. But they couldn't make.
They couldn't convict him either.
They couldn't convict.
They wouldn't.
Him.
They wouldn't identify him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know more than one person still living that was involved in this, by any chance?
No.
Just one's all you
just
know.
Just one person that was involved. That jail wall was that thick, and they had sledges and crowbars. They broke a hole through and reached in and unlocked that thing some way. You see, our Charlie Truax was one of my captains of police, and three or four of my policemen were in with the sheriff. And we had those tear gas bombs. They'd throw those tear gas bombs out into the crowd, then they would throw them back in, and our policemen and the sheriff's deputies were all crying because, but they just subdued. In fact, I think Jake and Orville Wells, and I don't remember who the other deputies was, and Charlie Truax and my cops, but I think they were afraid of the crowd. You see, they called the fire department down and was going to catch the hose up, and you know, I said, if you do, we'll upset the fire truck, we'll damage the fire truck, we'll cut the hose. So the firemen just there, and that was all there was to it. I had a call just day before yesterday. This woman called me about this very thing, and she was in her brother-in-law later became the fire chief, and he was on one of the trucks that went down there that night.
Did she want to know?
She said, we were wondering what date. They have that date anywhere from 1925 up to 32 or 33. Mm-hmm. And I get long-distance calls. People will have a bet. Well, we'll call Jack and we'll find out.
Do you know any prisoners that were in the jail besides these people at the time?
I can't remember, but I do remember two or three of the boys were in for stealing chickens. Now, I might have sent those guys to jail. You see, I was city judge.
I understand it.
And that's the reason I knew that there were several in there for stealing chickens. But offhand, I can't think of the name, but I remember some of the boys were in jail for stealing chickens.
Did you ever hear the name of a guy by the name of Ed Blotz?
No.
L-O-T-Z. Supposedly committed a torso murder.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He later was convicted for raping a girl and sent back to prison. Michigan City. Now, that's because we were still in the old building.
He was in the jail at the time.
Yeah, he was in the jail, and he'd cut this fellow's head up and arms up and had it in a sack and buried it in his garage. But then later on, they never could tie that in, but then later on they did. They found the body, but never could find the head. And he was later, then, I think whether he was tried or not, but then they revoked his parole and sent him back to Michigan City.
You remember anybody else that might have been in that jail for any reason?
But I remember a couple of the colored boys were in for stealing chickens, and without a doubt, I probably sent them to jail for stealing chickens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a considerable number of blacks in the jail at the time, apparently, 15 or so.
One of the most interesting things, which I always remember, that ring was given to me for Christmas, 1930.
This one here on your
right
hand?
My finger. Walter White, who is the executive secretary of the NAACP from New York, came out to help Mrs. W.T. Bailey, who had been president of the NAACP for 15 years. She was from Marion. She's been a lovely lady and a good friend of mine. But they presented me that ring for Christmas, 1930, in the old building, for what I'd done to try to protect the lives and the property of their fellow townsmen.
This ring here?
That ring right there. That ring is done with, that diamond has worn out three mountings. On Saturday morning, when the National Guard in, Colonel Healy, who was the commanding officer of the National Guard that came in, say they declared martial law, and they were there for 5 days. But he later became a brigadier general and lost a leg with sugar diabetes before he died not too long ago.
The whole town was under martial law?
Oh, yes, yes.
So you took your instructions from them, is that right?
Colonel Healy was the boss, and I made him honorary mayor in addition to that.
Are there any well-known black people still living in Marion that you can think of off the top of your head who would have known what the activities were in the black section during that time?
Very few, because the older ones, most of them are dead. Because I was very young in those days. That's the reason I carry on and I still remember. I can't remember offhand. Now this happened, these boys all lived out at in the 34th, 35th block, and there's a colored church on the corner of 35th and Washington, McCullough School here. But that area was all black. And I'll never forget driving up in that area and out down into Tench, Nebraska and Johnstown. That was the area we had to go. In the automobile, we had two cars, and we had probably four cops at each one, and I rode along with them.
Did you talk to any of the lynching victims' parents or relatives during that time?
I talked to the parents of all three of them, of the two boys that were lynched.
You did?
Yeah.
You remember when you did that?
Well, of course, I came back, they were hanged on Thursday night. I probably did that on a Saturday afternoon after the troops got there because there was too much danger. Because if those damn people who were crazy would have seen that I was trying to do anything at all, hell, you could tell what they've done to me because they were wild.
Do you recollect what you said to them or what was said to you in any way?
No, naturally, I felt sorry for anything happening in Marion because, after all, they lived in Marion, and I was the mayor of the city. I got a hell of a lot of blame for it, and really wasn't to blame at all. In fact, they had a picture later on. It was sent to me, taken in Paris, which showed the boy's body. And said, "Cut the bodies down and hang the mayor." My picture over here, And the boys' bodies over here and cut the body down, hang the mirror.
That came from where?
Paris.
France?
Paris, France.
In the Paris newspaper?
In a Paris paper over there.
Said cut the boys down
and hang the mayor. Well, of course, every campaign, if this thing comes up, every campaign, for this reason, we've got so many new Southern colored people. I lectured out at the high school about 2 years ago, an hour lecture for about four classes. And the question that came first from those young students was, what did you know about the lynching in Marion? And I would tell that story to every one of those classes. And I cleared the thing up because they still thought I was the mayor and I should have protected them. You see, the coroner has the highest police power. He arrested Jake Camel, and who was tried, for malfeasance in office for not protecting the boy with his life.
It was O.L. Stout.
I don't remember who the coroner was. O.L. Stout.
Let me ask you, you say you continue to get inquiries about this?
Yeah. Why? Just this week. I have inquiries. There won't be a week go by that I don't have somebody call me.
Let me ask you a general thought. There are a number of articles that ran in the Indianapolis News and some reference made in this Huntington newspaper that one of the possibilities for this mob activity was because of the authorities in Marion, the implication was that it was a lenient court system and prosecution system. Do you have any reason to believe that that might be true?
No, I don't think that was true, but I had a hell of a lot of arguments, Jim Ogden. Marion was like every other city. We had prohibition. You had your bootlegging. Marion wasn't alone. And we had those things that went on. You had your two or three little houses probably that every stop. But Jim Ogden came into Marion and he set on Marion and one headline, Marion is seething in vice and corruption. And later they indicted me, you know, in 1932 for taking a pint of whiskey for Christmas 1931. And the overt act was, one Harry D. Miller gave M. Jack Edwards, the mayor of Marion, a pint of whiskey, which was given to him by one Thomas alias Piggy Doyle for Christmas, 1931. I was indicted two times in federal court for that. And that Jim Ogden and I, we fought each other till his dying day.
Well, what kind of guy was Jim Ogden?
He was a son of a bitch. He was a crusader. And Marion was no different than Muncie, Anderson.
Where was he from, Jack?
Indianapolis here.
He was?
He was the Attorney General. He's trying to make a name for himself, just like Ted Sundeck's trying to do now.
What did he do after he were Attorney General?
He went out and practiced law.
He never held any other political office?
I don't. He died in a nursing home not too many years ago.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. But he faded out of the picture.
Did he have any children, do you know?
I wouldn't know. But the funny thing, you know, when we, later on, this follows up, I was indicted in 1932, but 21 of us was indicted for violation of prohibition law, and 16 of them were Republicans and 5 Democrats. And after the Republicans got their own people indicted, on the 23rd day of December 1932, after Roosevelt was elected, all indictments were dismissed under Judge Slick in Fort Wayne, who was the federal court judge at that time, and Oliver Loomis was the U.S. attorney, and Sam Jackson, the late Sam Jackson, was my lawyer, who later he was attorney general when Omar Stokes Jackson died. Then he later filled the unexpired term when Fred Vinnies died as the United States Senator. In 1944, he was the permanent chairman of the Democratic National Convention and gaveled the meeting down to keep Wallace from being nominated and nominated Harry Truman the next day.
Let me turn back just a minute here. Where was the old jail situated?
It's the same place it is today, on the corner of 3rd.
That's not the same jail.
Yes, it is.
The same jail? The
same jail is right where it is today. See, Branson Street here, 3rd Street here, and it occupies that corner. That would be on the northwest corner of 3rd and Nebraska.
So you would go, how far was it up to the courthouse square?
One block.
One block you'd go up.
Well, you really, from the jail was set here, and they had to go in that door. Here's the alley. It would only be a half block up to the square, and the tree was right here on the east side of the entrance going up to the courthouse.
The tree was on the east side of the entrance?
Yeah.
Okay.
A big elm.
When did that tree come down?
Well, of course, they picked every piece of bark off of it, these curiosity seekers, after that. And then they tried to get the commissioners to cut the tree down after that, but they wouldn't do it. And that tree hasn't been taken down, I'd say, in the last 10 years.
Is that right?
When we had so many starlings and so many birds, they cut the tree down.
It went on and lived for
years,
a long time.
Years and years, yes. And as long as that tree was there, that was a place people would come to Marion, always want to look at that tree. Of course, that's your morbid public.
Yeah, did you notice any lasting effects that sort of thing had in Marion between blacks and whites?
They scared the colored people to death. You had no trouble. We had no trouble with the colored people from that day on till in the last 10 years. In fact, I never had any trouble with the colored people even during my last time in the 60s. But in the last 10 years, or less than that, the colored, we have so many southern colored people, the militant type. And one of the ringleaders is nobody but Henry Mills, who is now the state president of the NAACP, who is he'll drag their organization down in a disrepute because he's a radical in every way, shape, and form.
What was the name of the, it was a newspaper reporter who testified, Brannon?
Yeah, Dry Brannon, Drysdale Brannon.
He's dead and gone?
Yes, he's dead.
Does he have relatives?
Yes, widow still lives there.
Oh, is that right?
She's married.
You know what her name is now?
Yeah, he works for Irving Manning. Her nickname is Frenchie. She's married to, I don't know what Manning's first name is, but he's one of the officials out at the Irving Gravel Company.
That's
a very fine lady.
And what about the newspaper at the time?
That was the Marion Leader Tribune and the Chronicle. Gardner Thomas was the editor and publisher of the Chronicle, and Jim McDonald and Carl Houston was the editor and publisher of the Leader Tribune. And the funny thing, the Leader Tribune, the jail sit here, the Paris was here, and next door was the Leader Tribune. And Jim McDonald, who was the manager of the paper, was the president of my police board. See, in those days, we had a police board, and a board of safety had charge of the fire department, but the police board had charge of the police department.
Well, how do you think they handled this?
I think the newspaper knows. I think they handled it all right. If there was anything wrong, it would have been the Republican paper, because later on, Gardner Thomas, who is the publisher of the Chronicle and the editor, he was blamed for having Maury Hall's father, who was the congressman at that time, some of the Republicans, get to Washington and come in and indict we Democrats. See, George Dale was indicted in Muncie. Hick Mellett was indicted at Anderson. Poor old Mayor Connolly was indicted over at Gas City. But after they got done with all them indictments in Grant County, there were 16 Republicans and 5 Democrats. So then we had them.
What about Jake Camel? What kind of guy was he?
Jake was a very, very fine man. He had spent years on the police department and was a...
On your police department? I'm in the Marion Police Department?
Well, yeah, but he was...
You mean on the deputy?
No, but before I became mayor, he was captain of police.
I see.
I think he probably had his 20 years in. He ran for sheriff 3 times before he was elected.
Well, he did run for 3 times.
3 times before he was elected.
Was he... have anything else? Does he have relatives still living, do you know?
He has a daughter living in Marion, but I don't know her. I knew her back years ago, but I don't know if she's living there or not, but I think she does in Marion.
You don't happen to know her name?
No, I don't.
Bert White was his
Bert
deputy.
White was a deputy. Bert later became sheriff, but Bert's dead too.
W.O. Miller?
W.O. Miller was a deputy. And Orville Wells was a deputy. Orville was from Fairmont.
Mm-hmm. Now the county generally was Republican then.
Oh, yes.
And Harley Hardin was beaten in the next election.
For prosecuting attorney.
Does this have anything to do with it, do you think, or?
It could. Ed Hayes beat him. I know Roy Dempsey beat him.
No, Hayes beat him.
Did he? Because I had three prosecuting attorneys at the 5 years that I was mayor. See, I had an extra term at me. Not through all the elections together. That way, I should have been running in 33, so I ran in 34.
So you felt Hardin was a pretty competent guy?
No, he wasn't. He was a poor lawyer.
How long had he been prosecutor, do you remember?
Well, he only had 1 2-year term.
Was that it?
Yeah, you see, he went in 30 and 31. That's when the prosecutor was elected, but you didn't take office until a year later.
That's right.
And Thurman Biddinger was his deputy.
Right.
Then Ed became prosecutor, and his deputy was George White.
Now, they had an inquiry shortly after this. Ogden sent a couple of deputies up there, and Harley Hardin had an inquiry before a justice of the peace. Sturgeon or Sturgis or something like that?
Sturgeon Watson.
Sturgeon Watson.
The J.P.
Why was that held before the J.P.? Do you have any idea?
Well, that's when they were after me. See, the federal authorities were in there trying to get we mayors.
For what?
Anything. It was just all politics they're trying to do.
Out of this lynching?
No,
I'm talking about the lynching.
Oh, no.
Well, after the lynching, then a few days after that, Hardin convened a board of inquiry before this Justice of the Peace, Sturgeon Watson. And do you have any idea why they selected that process for that?
Well, they probably were trying to soft-pedal this thing so that Jake would not have to carry the whole load, Jake Kemmel.
Well, they say that in this inquiry they came up with at least 20 names of people positively identified in this lynching. But then the grand jury, of course, reported nothing back on anybody. That's when Ogden came in and filed his affidavits later on then against these people that they had some identification
but
on.
But then Ogden still kept that ill feeling against Marion, and from there on he started after me.
What about Clausen?
Clausen was a fine man. I don't know whether he served two terms or three. Judge Oliver D. Clausen, circuit court judge. And they were tried before him, but...
Does he have relatives around?
He has a daughter living there now.
Do you know her name?
Clausen. She's been married, but she took her maiden name. And she's probably one of the best read, best educated, from the standpoint of psychiatry, there is in the country, but she kind of got off the beam. And in fact, I had her in about 3 months ago asking her to volunteer on certain types of psychiatric work if I would have people coming in.
I need to know, in addition to this fellow whose name that you won't disclose, I need to get someone who can tell me what the circumstances were inside that jail at the time. Is there anyone you can think of, or anyone that's still alive that might shed some light on that? Any deputies or newspaper people or firemen or anyone?
No, there's only two policemen left alive, and he died day before yesterday. There were policemen on the police force at that time. I've only got one living policeman left, Roy Cox. Roy Cox might know something.
Roy Cox?
Yes.
All right.
He is the only remaining policeman now since Pat died. And then he drove the armored car along with George Doherty. We made many trips after Dillinger. And Roy Cox would...
About a guy by the name of Roy Collins?
Roy Collins was my assistant chief of police.
He's dead and gone.
He's dead and gone. And he lost his nerve after we all got indicted, and I transferred him to the fire department.
Okay.
Of course, I see him every day, because he'd be at that funeral Thursday when we buried Pat, my last policeman outside of Roy.
Let me ask you this. Officer Schell, S-C-H-E-L-L? Is he dead?
He died in Florida.
Officer Bright?
He's dead.
What about a Dr. J.C. Ross or a Dr. G.G. Eckhart?
They're both dead.
Southerner. Ross was?
Yeah, he was a Southerner. He detested colored people.
What about Lindemuth?
Lindemuth was my chief of police.
Type of guy was he?
One of the finest police officers ever lived. He was the fellow that walked in the Amboy Bank and captured that bank robber by himself. And the bank robber was just, has been 5 or 6 years ago, was paroled. And when these two girls, the three girls, caught that bank robber up there, that brought everybody mine back the time. Lou walked in that bank and captured that bank robber.
This guy's name was Dave Fansler, F-A-N-S-L-E-R.
He lived down there, but Dave was really a bootlegger.